when my mum died and we went to the service and she was cremated, you know, we stood outside and I... Because my mum was a gardener and that's where I got my gardening background from. And I looked around and I thought, wow, this is a nice little space, isn't it? You know, it was quite nice just to look out and see a few roses, see some nice trees. No cars going past, anything like that. So I think the idea of the peaceful places really is deep in the human core when it comes to grieving.
Park the car. Get out and close the door. Pull the scarf around your neck. Put your hands in your pockets. Walk along a row of flowers. This is Off Track on RN. I'm Anne Jones, and we're here together in one of Australia's biggest cemeteries. It's Fawkner Memorial Park in Melbourne. We're not very far from where Sydney Road intersects with the Ring Road. It's noisy and it's busy outside the cemetery boundaries. And actually, it's noisy inside as well because the Upfield Line train runs along the edge of the place, slicing a section of the cemetery off from another. They say that those who run cemeteries are in the real estate business. They offer you a highly designed landscape and patch of land that will give you and your family the peace you deserve. But in Victoria, this isn't a rental agreement, and it's not even a long-term lease. Your body gets to stay there forever. Victorian cemetery plots are maintained in perpetuity. And as you can probably imagine, this brings planning issues up for the cemetery boards. Not only where are they going to fit all the bodies, but also how they'll maintain those graves in a respectful manner forevermore. Kevin Walsh is the manager of horticultural planning for the Greater Metropolitan Cemeteries Trust, who look after Fawkner Memorial Park and all of its sections.
They go through a life cycle. They start out as being really active and busy and lots of burials and lots of visitation, and then over the decades you get less visitors, and then they move into a sort of period where you get very little visitation except for possibly family history. But it's a long, in perpetuity, it's a long time, and a big issue to fund as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that, because in terms of resources, as essentially the grave sites multiply and multiply every year, but with no income from each gravesite every year. So it's sort of like a one-off funding for the rest of time.
That's right. So, you know, that's where our finance people to sort. And really, basically, what they do is they put a certain proportion of the money into funds that the interest pays for the maintenance of those older cemeteries. But we can also look at some of our older cemeteries as far as techniques go, of maybe we should put edging on garden beds so that it's easier to maintain those garden beds or those rose beds, rather than having to whippersnip the edge or spray the edge or what have you. So there might be some techniques that we can put in place so that down the track it's easy to maintain. The biggest issue for us by far is our tree stock. We have 18 cemeteries of various ages, a lot of them very old, with very old trees on them that are all getting to a stage that they are dying of old age or are starting to fall apart, and we have safety concerns about them. At the Fawkner Memorial Park, we estimate we've got 10,000 trees. So our biggest issue is actually planning how we're going to approach taking them out, replacing them, and how we do that over staged, over maybe decades, so that we get good generations. But it's going to be, for us, just something that will be ongoing for decades.
Well, for perpetuity.
For perpetuity, because, you know, we plant something now and in 150 years someone else is going to replace it. And that's what's happening with us. We're looking at replacing something that was planted by someone 120 years ago.
Puts it in perspective, doesn't it?
It does. And of course, you've got to remember that a lot of our trees, while they are ornaments, they actually have people's cremated remains at the base of them, so really we want to keep them healthy and looking good for the visitors and the loved ones.
The cemetery is divided into sections along all sorts of lines, including religious lines. But one of the things that strikes me, especially in the more modern sections, is the manner in which you're creating those things they used to refer to in the 90s as the outdoor rooms. I don't know if that's still fashionable. You're really creating a finite area with the plantings.
That's right. And look, when we're looking into the future, we're designing with peacefulness in mind. It's very important for us to create that sense of enclosure, which also reduces the wind, and we might want to have shelter belts or screen planting so that people get a sense of privacy, which is really important for people when they're grieving and visiting loved ones. Also that it creates a sense of a special place, so you don't see that there might just be factories across the road. Modern cemeteries have gone a long way away from denominational plantings, you know, the Catholic section or the Church of England section. But what we've done more is create spaces that are different and appeal to different people, and even really appeal to different budgets, so that you might want to go with a lawn burial, but there are different standards or qualities of lawn burial depending on your budget. You might have different spaces that are more enclosed or more native, so that you think, oh, well, you know, my loved one loved native plants, so I'll go there with their, to inter their remains. So All those things are part of the design process.
Another popular option is to inter the cremated remains of your loved one beneath a standard rose. In fact, at Fawkner Memorial Park, there are 14,000 standard roses. Christine Filmer started working at the cemetery about 22 years ago when she started as a gardener, but now she's the senior supervisor of horticulture, and as you can imagine, she has a lot of experience with roses.
We're currently looking at a Sweet Susie, which is pale pink and fragrant, and they're all standard roses, or nearly all standard roses throughout the cemetery. They're 3-foot standards. And underneath, because we are in a cemetery situation, we've got cremated remains. There's interments, so we can plan out a bed, and then there's the disturbance of when the interments happen. There can be quite a bit of stress to the plants.
We're standing in front of a curved bed that has concrete edging. It's slightly built up. There looks like some daffodils and some other flowers that are planted sort of in between. The roses are probably about 1.5 feet apart from each other, and looking gorgeous. There's actually still some blooms on these ones, even though we're in the winter. Yeah. What's going on below?
Oh, okay. So the roses have quite a fibrous root system. So when we plant, we try and plant maybe 1/2 foot away from the concrete edge, and there's enough space between the roses to place the cremated remains. So when they do dig, they normally bury, it's in a box, smaller than a shoebox, the remains. We try and do the least disturbance as possible, so they're normally either side of the rose.
Okay, so they're actually sort of in between each rose rather than directly underneath it.
Yes, that's correct, yep.
Those boxes, do they degenerate?
No, they're actually a hard plastic container. Some people choose to use their own urns, so there could be urns as well, but on a majority, they're just a hardened plastic box.
And do you ever get any cases of the roots actually penetrating those boxes?
No, we don't. No. The box is solid.
Yeah. I can imagine that when you've got, say, a sick plant or a rose is getting to the end of its lifespan for one particular reason or another, I can imagine that that's actually a very sensitive time, because if this was my family member and this rose was planted in their memory, it would potentially be shocking to see the rose pulled out. So how do you deal with it?
It can be very distressing to the client. We try and keep majority of our replacements for winter, and we do put out a tag that says this rose will be replaced in our major rose replacement time. The other thing that the client can do is go to the reception and they'll report that the rose is not looking well and they'd like a replacement, and we'll try and order in a rose, but sometimes a particular variety isn't available, so they will need to wait. But if it's an anniversary or a special occasion, then we'll try and get them in.
What sort of horticultural issues do you have with the roses? Do you ever get outbreaks of disease or anything?
We have a little bit of aphid outbreak. On a whole, our roses have been getting a little bit healthier. We've been converting the irrigation through to drip irrigation. So we once used to have an overhead irrigation. Now it's drip, so it's a lot more sustainable with water as well. So our disease has dropped off quite a bit.
Because the overhead watering can lead to some sort of fungus and stuff,
yeah,
does it?
Yeah, so we used to get a lot of black spot and rust and all those sort of things, and mildew. We still get a little bit of mildew, but we try not to spray where possible.
What are the major causes of rose death for you in this park?
Well, previously it's been from water restriction. We've had to look at our change of plantings and what's going to be able to survive. Obviously, we need to plant roses because that's what our client and customer base require. But where possible, we try and choose plants that are, you know, more tolerant to the seasonal conditions that we now have.
There's so many aspects to the planning and everyday running that people probably don't realise when they're visiting here, visiting a grave.
No, I don't think they do. And, I guess it's the scale of things too. So, you know, with stakes, we're not just ordering 10, we'll be ordering a pallet of 500 or more. And even with the Velcro tie for the roses, we'll be ordering 40 rolls instead of one rolls. Yeah, the resources, we use huge amounts.
So you're potentially keeping the rose industry alive as well.
Part of it, we probably are, yeah.
The cemetery's been through some tough times with the long dry that was had a few years ago. And look, you know, the protecting El Nino coming up, so we have to keep sustainability in the back of our minds. We've gone to mostly the warm season grasses, which need less water. And now we're hoping in the next year or two to start investigating a whole lot of alternative water sources, so we can start looking at possibilities in grey water, maybe tapping into seasonal creeks, maybe storing water, maybe the term sewer mining, you know, tapping into local sewer systems or local stormwater systems. Melbourne Botanic Gardens have done something similar to top up their lakes and irrigate, so we think that's a good model, so that's one of the things we'll be thinking about in the future.
For those that work here, the business of death is everyday and mundane, but there's certainly more to think about in cemeteries than death. There are thousands and thousands of living things that require attention daily. At the Faulkner Memorial Park, there are 24 staff who maintain the horticulture on site, and it's a big site, say at least as big as two 18-hole golf courses stuck together. It's so big, in fact, that there are little guide cars that lead the hearse and the lines of Mournerfield cars in slow caterpillars around the park, so they don't get lost on the kilometres of road trying to find where to put the coffin. There are 14,000 rose bushes, at least 10,000 trees and thousands of shrubs. And that's not to mention the mowing.
My name's Timothy Ashby, or Tim, Timmy they call me, and my qualification is qualified gardener. Pretty much we do landscaping and I maintain a large area of gardens. And
so how is it different doing this in this style of garden?
Well, being a cemetery, I guess, too, because you get a lot of people that are in different stages of their grief, you know, so, and you're helping them out from day to day, so I mean that's rewarding, you know, you're helping someone out in a pretty torrid time, eh? Yeah, and you're tending to their loved ones, eh, pretty much. I mean, they, you know, they've got their loved ones here, and some people come, you know, once a week or even every day, vigilantly. And, you know, they'll see you in the area, and sometimes they'll come up and, you know, they're very appreciative of, you know, you're tending to their loved ones. Yeah.
We're in a section at the moment that's got all of these native plantings. Can you tell me a little bit about the sort of landscaping we've got here?
They're built-up mounds, so they're elevated sites, and they've got rocks strewn in between them. The rocks are sold as a placement for ash interments.
So when you're talking about rocks, these are sort of boulders, though. These are big rocks.
Yeah, they are. When we first initially were told to landscape this area, we were just told to get some boulders. We said, well, what size? And they said, oh, you know, some big boulders. So we took excavators over there. It took about eight weeks to excavate all these rocks out. But they were big boulders, but in the end, they became mammoth. I mean, there's some around here that stand 6 feet high. And that was just a mental challenge, trying to get them from one area, which is about 500 metres that way, west, to over to this section, eh?
Yeah. And are you happy with how it's looking at the moment?
Oh, it's fantastic, yeah. It's great. And the native flora and all that, now we've got, there's seven residential kangaroos that actually come in to this area. There's footprints up there, you know, with their tail jumping up and down. It started off with three, but now we've got seven, and there's two with little joeys. So, I mean, apart from, you know, the zoo or even Healesville Sanctuary, what place in a semi-urban environment can you actually come to work and see kangaroos?
You're listening to Off Track on RN. I'm Anne Jones. It can be easy to get sucked into the grief at the cemetery. The gravestone of a child, the anniversary of a mother's death. It can be easy to get sucked into the morbidity at the cemetery. The smell of the crematorium sometimes wafts past, sort of like burnt toast on drifting wind. And it's easy to be reviled by the thought of thousands of bodies lying around you and the thousands of bodies that are still to come. But how do those thousands of bodies and containers of ashes affect the soil? And does that in turn affect the lawn and the roses and the trees at Fawkner Memorial Park? Kevin Walsh.
Generally speaking, no. The burials are quite deep. And cremated remains just about always are in some sort of container. It does, with cremated remains under roses and in garden beds, in containers, sometimes make the work a little bit difficult. But the one issue that really arises from cemeteries is drainage issues, because the ground is so manipulated by graves that often the drainage, the natural underlying drainage of the area, gets upset. It'll depend a little bit on the site. Some cemeteries on the side of hills or even on the tops of hills, so the drainage actually, again, after burial and so on, finds its natural pattern. But where it's very flat, and that happens on quite a few of our cemeteries, then the water sits because the natural underground drainage pattern has been upset. So you'll get quite boggy patches often.
Could you explain what you mean by the natural underground drainage pattern?
Look, in most soils, what you'll find is that water percolates through the soil, through the topsoil and down into a heavy clay layer or onto the top of the clay layer or onto shale or a hard surface, and then forms little underground creeks virtually on the top of those layers and makes its way through till it finds a natural creek or a natural place to outfall. Sometimes it ends up in great big caves, which is where people were stink bores, and, you know, that's where they, aquifers and so, where they use that water. But in a cemetery situation, you've dug, you're talking about 6, 7, 8, 9 feet graves that might be only a matter of a few feet apart, so you've totally destroyed the soil structure.
Where people are interred in coffins underneath the ground, in terms of landscaping, what sort of issues crop up with those sorts of graves?
With a lot of the burial sites, they're in lawn areas, so we can level the area and lay turf, but if we have a lot of wet weather, then the soil does subside, so there's a lot of topping up. So where people may have had grass, they may come in the next day and there'll be a top dressing of or a top layer of soil. You know, and often people don't expect to see that and they think that the grave's been disturbed, but it's bringing the lawn area back to being level, so that's important for us as well.
So what is that? Is that the essentially the settling of the disturbed soil?
Yes, the settling of the soil. So when the grave's backfilled, there's a lot of air pockets. So, and when it rains, those air pockets all squash together and so the soil subsides.
As the age of the coffin grows older, does it actually biodegrade and cause sinking? Because occasionally you see those older graves that are a bit uneven.
Yeah, with the older graves, the reason they move is because they haven't got appropriate footings. Like the footings during that time were made of bricks, you know, whereas now they do the proper piers and things to support the monument. So it's the actual monument foundations that aren't holding the monument in place.
Yeah, because some of them are really big, aren't they? Yeah, I mean, that'd be a big bit of stone with, you know, some engravings and urns and things on the top. So they could weigh, well, I imagine quite a lot. Do they have to use special equipment to get them in place, the new ones?
Oh, depending on the size, a lot of it's manual labour, but the larger ones, they do use cranes. But yeah, it's amazing to watch the monuments being put together by the masons as well.
It's a very unusual type of garden sculpture. It's very particular to your type of garden.
It is very particular to our garden, but, you know, it adds to it as well, because some of the older engravings are fascinating to go around and read, and the statues are, you know, they're really architectural angels and things, so it's really good.
How do you manage lawn upkeep? Because we all know from our Saturday and Sunday mornings that mowing is very disruptive, to people's quiet time.
Yeah, so if we've got services going on, then we'll move away from that particular area. We've got several different types of mowers, so we've got many ride-on mowers ranging from large to smaller, so and they're area specific. So we've got a mowing round that the guys follow, and yeah, and they know that if there's a service going on, then they'll move away from that area.
We are given a sheet every morning, so that depicts where the funerals actually are. So if we're in that vicinity, you know, we pretty much look out to see if the funeral's coming up. And if that be the case, yeah, we vacate to another area where we can work. Yeah, minimise the sound, you know, especially if you're on machinery, you cut that down.
Yeah. You've been working here a while. Does it affect you when you see the funeral?
Oh, yes and no. I mean, you know, you don't... Oh, that's... At first, yeah, you know, I mean, I didn't know what to do, eh? I'd have a shovel in my hand, I'm going, oh, geez, what'll I do with this, you know? Throw it in the bushes or something. You know, because you think, well, a shovel, that digs a hole, you know. But now, not really. Yeah, we just, still affects you in a little way. I mean, you know that it's a deceased person, so, yeah, so...
Has it made you think about your own arrangements for when you might, you know?
Yes, that creeps in sometimes, yeah. But I quickly throw that thought away. It's not a very good thought to have process,
no.
Really.
No, so you've got to make your working life sort of sustainable mentally, don't you? So,
yeah.
Look, it's hard when you haven't been in the cemetery business not to reflect on some of the things you see. You'll see, you know, little graves from kids that have died after a few months. That's very sad, especially if you see the family coming back visiting year after year to visit that site. I recently saw a grave in one of our cemeteries where four brothers were killed on the same day in the First World War. And you've got to reflect then on things like the First World War and loss and so on. Occasionally you see your own name on a headstone. That's a little bit scary as well. It really is quite a nice place to visit if you're not visiting a loved one who might be buried here or interred here. But we do have people that come and walk their dogs through, for argument's sake, because it is a peaceful place. And you wouldn't know that there was Sydney Road just, you know, within Cooee of here. I've been involved in sort of landscape planning and management and so on for years, but the cemeteries differ in that the core role of a cemetery is as a memorial park. And you should never at any stage forget that this park is about people's loved ones. We have a lot of other lovely things we do with roses and trees and biodiversity and so on, but the core of what we do is about memories for the visitors and the people that are buried here.
Landscaping for the Dead, and The Living They Leave Behind. Kevin Walsh, Christine Filmer, and Timothy Espy all work at the Greater Metropolitan Cemeteries Trust, and we were walking through the gardens at Fawkner Memorial Park in Melbourne. Remember, you can listen to this again online, as well as the whole back catalogue of shows that take you off the beaten track and out into the world. Simply go to abc.net.au/RN and then use that program list on the right-hand side to find Off Track. I'm Anne Jones, and join me next time on Off Track when I'll take you somewhere else. Have you decided how you would like to finish off?
That's an interesting question, and of course it's one you confront when you work in a cemetery. My heart and soul lies at the beach, so I think I'm going to be cremated and have my ashes put at the beach.
And then listen to this.
Radio Tonic. Refresh your ears on Sundays. RN presents two innovative new programs.
Radio Tonic, a heady mix of fiction, essays and drama. 3 p.m.
And then listen to this.
While Soundproof at 8 p.m. is a weekly portal into radio art, soundscapes and performance.
Take a closer listen. Radio Tonic and Soundproof. We're at the RN homepage.